Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, your weekly pod to help you earn, save, and make more money. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine, and thank you once again for joining us. Today, we're going to talk about a type of investment called private credit, what it is, what it isn't, and how do you invest in it. If by chance this is the first time you're hearing about this type of investment, don't worry. It has been around for quite some time, but it really took off after the global financial crisis, or GFC, in 2008, and more recently in the last couple of years as people try and look for alternative sources of income. Why is that? We'll soon find out. Now, if you stick around until the end of this episode, you'll also understand why this type of asset class, private credit, has trebled in size to more than $3 trillion in less than a decade. I'll repeat that, more than $3 trillion. In fact, your super fund might have already made some returns from it. But of course, like any other investment, you'll need to weigh the returns and the risks. So we'll talk about that too. So to help with that, our guest today is Paul Miron. Paul is the co-founder and managing director at M Squared Capital. He has over 25 years experience in the finance industry and is the principal theorist behind M Squared Capital's credit policy. Throughout his career, he has held senior positions at Westpac, Commonwealth Bank, and he has acquired a lot of knowledge in relationship management, funding structures, and intricate loan products. But can I just say that Paul is such a believer in private product that he's gone all in. So he is the co-founder of this business called M Squared Capital. Paul, a welcome to Friends with Money.
Thank you, Michelle. That's a great introduction.
No dramas. Now, I'm not going to lie. It would be probably awkward sitting next to you at dinner if you start telling me about private credit. So here's hoping that at the end of this episode, at least our listeners can say, hey, I know a little bit something about that. I listened to Paul's podcast. So we'll kick off with the very basic question. What is private credit?
Private credit is the ability for investors to invest directly into a mortgage. Typically, a borrower can go to a bank, but sometimes they go to private credit providers such as ourselves as an alternative to going to the bank. And it is a direct ability to invest into a direct mortgage, which at the moment is quite lucrative because the returns can anywhere between 7% and 14% return. So there's a lot of attention to private credit at the moment because people are realizing the benefits that you can get from private credit.
What would be a typical investor say in this asset class?
The typical investor, I think it's important to segregate the different types of opportunities in debt as well. There is what's called secured debt, meaning that where every single time we issue a debt facility, it's always secured by a physical property. And typically we don't allow people to borrow more than 65% against a particular real estate security. They give us a security. But the reason why you want to segregate it, because debt instruments can be done against for different purposes, different jurisdiction geographically, and they may have different types of security. So there is debt against businesses, which is only secured by the goodwill of the business. There are facilities against infrastructure. It could be, it's very wide. So mortgages are not homogenous. And so it's really important for people to be aware that even though it could be a private credit provider, what is the actual security? What is the speciality of the fund manager? You need to be able to ask a series of questions to be able to uncover and understand what the risk and reward is for the investor itself. Because what we're finding right now, even though private credit is growing at a rapid pace, the awareness from a lot of investors is not necessarily there understanding what they're really getting themselves into.
So different types of investors, depending on the returns, but also making sure that you understand what is underneath the fund itself or the private credit fund itself. Now, how much would you need to invest ideally?
Well, ideally, you know, some investors start with a minimum invest in a wholesale fund like M Squared. The minimum investment is around $50,000. And we, you know, we have investors from all walks of life, whether it's self-funded retirees who want to have stability and income. They're reliant on their income on a month-to-month for their living. It complements the position to larger investors who, for example, we have a lot of investors in our fund who are actually property developers who understand property really well, and they don't see the value of developing property, and they want to park the money for a year or two until they want to get back into the market. So the investors are all comes from all walks of life and all different segments. There are a lot of institutional investors out there as well looking for a lot of opportunities. You can't pick up the paper on a daily basis without seeing an article about private credit and appetite for it. So it can be anyone in reality who has money who would like to invest.
So what is the size of the market in Australia?
Well, the size of the market is growing substantially. It's growing on average 20% per year. I read some research as well just recently that in 5 years it will more than double.
Whoa.
The last research that I've seen, it's going to be about $350 billion in Australia.
Why is it growing so fast?
For a number of different reasons. In order for a private credit transaction to happen, there's two sides of the balance sheet. So there is a demand for the money. Borrowers are seeking alternative finance than the traditional banks. There's a number of reasons why that is happening. First of all, you know, after the Royal Commission, not all the banks can offer certain type of lending opportunities to borrowers. A gap that M Squared has found in the market is, for example, bridging loans. So when someone needs a loan for a short period of time, call it 12 to 18 months, traditionally larger banks not really interested in short-term facilities. And there are dislocations and segments of the market which are not necessarily looked after very well. And therefore, nimble private credit providers such as ourselves will find the best risk and reward for its investors based on those requirements. Another reason is speed to market. A borrower typically can come to M Squared and get a facility done within 3 working days if they need something done urgently. It's also knowledge and certainty there as well. So, you know, we hear stories from a lot of our borrowers to say that they've been in the queue to get their application assessed for up to 3 months if it is a complicated business transaction. So there's a number of reasons why what's called the funding gap is even growing. And there's a lot of aspects of the lending market which are a little bit unloved by major institutions. On the investor side, there's a lot of demand because you have stability of income, you have preservation of capital as well. There is a lot of other, in a diversified portfolio, private credit can actually enhance your returns. And the returns at the moment, you know, you're getting double-digit returns in certain lending investment opportunities, which is, you know, very comparable to, for example, equity market without the downside risk.
Right. And it does seem like it's a reflection of people understanding debt or fixed income or bonds a little bit more, whereas maybe a few decades ago, it was all about shares in terms of what Aussie investors are after. Now, I want to talk about the fees. So this is always the question, what is the range of the investment fees?
All of the returns that are provided to investors are quoted as net returns. Different managers can charge what's called a difference between the borrowing rate and the investor return. So for example, if we charge a borrower 10%, traditionally the manager will charge about 1% difference and they will offer 9% to the investor. So that's a net interest margin, but it varies between manager and manager. It depends on the complexity of the loan. But in traditional form, the way it is presented to investors, it's a net return with no fees.
So we're saying that this really all depends on the product, of course, and there are a lot of private credit funds out there. And then you're saying that it is the net return. But just to simplify it, if it were like someone invested 50,000, how much would they be out of pocket, if you like? Like that year, very simple. I've got 50 grand. I want the 8% return. How much roughly will I be spending for that investment?
You'll be spending nothing at all. It will cost you zero to be investing in or out of the investment opportunity.
Surely there are admin fees or exit fees or entry fees.
Well, with M Squared, there's no entry fee or exit fees. If we provide one of our flagship funds, for example, is 8%, has a pool of 35 different investments in it or direct mortgages. The average gearing is 55% LVR. You may invest $50,000. And then if you want to redeem it, let's call it in 12 months time, there's no cost to the investor at all.
But in general, is this that's just say with your product, but in general with private credit funds, they have to check it? The fees vary?
The fees that the manager charges can vary internally in the fund. And then if you obtain research on that particular fund, it'll actually or you look at the constitution, it'll actually state what the average cost is internally. But from an investor perspective or experience, it's very clean. There's no exit fees in or out.
Why should people consider private credit in their investment portfolio when they've got traditionally direct holdings in property or managed funds or ETFs, or they have like a collection of shares? Like a lot of people have like, you know, Combank shares, Westpac shares, and maybe some resources stocks as well.
Very interesting question. It's all about diversification, enhancing your returns, and having stability there as well. Harry Markowitz is a guy in 1960s who created modern asset allocation theory. And he's the one actually put together the theory behind having 60% of your portfolio in shares and 40% in bonds. So at that particular time, bonds wasn't volatile. It had a very stable interest rate environment. And a lot of people are saying now, if you want to get the same intended outcome of a diversified portfolio, perhaps you take some of the 40% of your allocation that you would put to bonds to private credit. Because private credit, it's a ballast to your portfolio. So it's not correlated to what's going to happen in the share market. It's a debt facility. If I negotiate with a borrower that he's going to pay 10%, the return is fixed to the investor, irrespective of what's happening in the marketplace. And better still, worst case scenario, if something happens like a black swan event and all asset classes fall, the most critical thinking that you have with private credit is that when things do go bad, that you need to ensure that you'll be able to get your capital and interest back when things fall apart in the economy. Now, we haven't had that for the last 15 years, but the whole point with a debt facility is that if you've got security behind it, and you, for example, you have a property and you've only lent someone 55% value of that property, if the borrower gets into trouble, he'll sell that asset. And so the investor is always going to be covered with his capital and interest. So it's a very powerful tool to understand as well on how it works in your portfolio. It's all about that asset preservation and being able to give you that return irrespective of what's happening in the economy or any volatility that's happening in the marketplace.
Which would be great for retirees, for example, or anyone who's maybe saving up for uni fees if you're kind of a young family or say, for example, it's just something that you don't want to worry over the next 5 years and you just want that certainty. Now, you mentioned 15 years. So if you're new to investing, you will probably look at private credit with a fresh perspective, with all the nuances of what private credit looks right now. But if you wind down time to maybe 20, 25 years ago, there was a period where mortgage funds or income funds had a bad rap because of withdrawals or freezes, which, like you said, people couldn't get their money out. What would you say to those people who are now probably approaching retirement and they're thinking, oh, so what's new?
There's two parts of this question. What happened 20 years ago or so was the fact that all of the funds, all private credit funds, were all money at call. So if you look at it from a liquidity perspective, you're issuing debt to borrowers, and that has it can you can be issuing debt any terms, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. But then if there's a run on money, it takes time for all that money to come back. And 20 years ago, all of the funds were at call, and so they were frozen. And so it wasn't necessarily that all these funds lost the investor any money. It was a fact that you had a dislocation in relation to expectation of liquidity versus the actual value of the book. So people understand property trust. If you buy a property, it's not a liquid asset. And therefore, if you invest into these funds, you have to look at what the liquidity of that fund is. So with M Squared, for example, our average term of debt that we issue through our two pool funds is no longer than 7 months. So therefore, I can assure certain type of liquidity with our fund. So that's what happened 20, 25 years ago. The second part of any time that a private credit fund hasn't performed well or lost money is when they have done things which are a little bit creative. So when they haven't looked at security very well, or they've lent money against assets which are illiquid. So property developments, rural land, farmland, these are all specialized securities like pubs. These are asset classes which are all fine when the general economy is doing really, really well. When things get tough, these asset classes become quite illiquid. And then the third part of it is valuations. So as soon as you start lending money against pubs where the value of the asset is determined on the value of the business and something happens to the business, you could crystallize a loss in that particular debt facility. So private credit is quite significant in America, for example. 70% of all commercial debt is written by private credit providers, as opposed to 8% in Australia. But a lot, you have to look deeper. A lot of it is against middle market businesses in the US, and it's only secured by the business. So if we do have a patchy time in the economy, there is a risk. There's a risk of capital loss there, is that if these businesses do fail and you're only banking on the goodwill of the business, who are you going to sell that goodwill to? What's the secondary market of the value of those businesses? Whereas America might be a little bit different, but this is the type of advice that I'll give to investors listening, is you really need to appreciate that just because you're getting 7% return versus another product where you, in private credit you might be getting 9, doesn't mean that the risk is higher or lower depending on your return. It's up to the investor to actually work out what's the underlying security and whether the right questions have been asked in relation to the quality of the borrower, what's the security, what are the rules that fund operates under to ensure that they're preserving as much capital as possible.
So to recap, it truly is like with any other investment, you do your homework. But what comes across to me right now is to say, hey, if you are looking at private credit, make sure you know what's under the bonnet. So, you know, you're not being creative and putting in the goodwill of a business as part of the price. You are talking about real mortgages, and these are clean mortgages, and all of that jazz that you really need to look at when you're investing.
Absolutely. So, for example, if someone presents to you a opportunity to invest into a private credit where your only security is the goodwill of a business, and you're getting 7% return, as opposed to an opportunity where you're lending money against a property in Mossman, and the gearing is not more than 60%. And your return is 9, which one would you take? And it's as simple as that. But if you're not asking the question, how do you gauge the risk and reward? So the biggest advice is investors and planners need to do their research and ask the simple questions, because they're not very complicated. If you're not getting simple answers back, you should be careful.
Well said, well said. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. And like I said, this is just a beginner conversation on how private credit as an asset class works. Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, if you enjoyed listening to this episode and it's piqued your interest on private credit, make sure you keep listening to the Friends with Money podcast. And we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics you'd love for us to cover through our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. And finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all the latest financial news and stories. That's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.